funds to cope with rubis to keep us in the way with petitum probably always leave it alone. Lord Indra ended his prayers to Krishna by admitting his great wrong. And what was his great wrong? That his anger, born out of pride, caused him to attempt to destroy all of Vrindavan. What an incredibly great wrong. And he's acknowledged the fault of this, especially because his anger was directed to Krishna. So he said, you have shown, Indra said to Krishna, his final prayer was, you have shown mercy to me by shattering my false pride and defeating my attempt to punish Vrindavan. This is such an incredible fact of life, that all the pride that we have is false pride, and it stands in the way of our relationship with Krishna. So here at this point, Indra is thanking Krishna for removing his false pride. But before, it wasn't immediate that, oh, Krishna, you've taken away my false pride, like just like if we have some kind of disease and Krishna takes it away, we're immediately relieved and happy. But oh, this one is a very painful process, the removal of the false pride. And Indra, first he passed through the stage of incredible anger. And then finally, when he realized who he was dealing with, then, and only then, after being humiliated, only then could he actually take shelter of Krishna and beg his forgiveness. This pride doesn't leave easily. Raghunath Das Goswami, Srila Raghunath Das Goswami also speaks about this in Manasiksha. This pride is very, very dangerous. But Indra, for the time being, has removed it, and he's come to Krishna for shelter. And this is the symptom of someone who has removed his pride, is that he takes shelter of Krishna, because pride, in that sense, is synonymous. It is none different from false ego, a false sense of being separate from Krishna. So as soon as the pride is removed, then immediately we're established again in our relationship with Krishna. I mean, at least there are no obstacles, and it's so natural to take shelter of Krishna, but it is pride. So Indra has taken the medicine, he's gotten the full treatment. And that was one of the reasons why Krishna performed this wonderful pastime and of holding Govardhan Hill to remove the false pride of Indra, to rectify Indra's mistake. Another reason was he could spend time with the Brijbasis and enjoy pastimes, because they have so much love for him. They have no pride. They have just only one thing. Only love for Krishna. They have nothing else. And also, he's given us the mercy of being able to hear the wonderful pastime of Govardhan Puja and the wonderful opportunity to observe it every year. So now, Krishna, in three verses, 17, 18, and 19, 15, 16, and 17, he's going to reply in just three verses. Indra spoke, I think, 11 verses. And Krishna is going to reply in a very simple way in three verses. But before, here's text 14. Sukadeva Goswami said, "Thus glorified by Indra, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, smiled." And then he spoke to Indra, he spoke to him as follows, in a voice resonant like the clouds, very deep, full of gravity. Short purport. "Although in this pastime Lord Krishna appeared to be a small boy, the word mega gambiraya vacha indicate that he spoke to Indra with the deep resonant voice of the Supreme Lord." Sri Bhagavan Vatsa, little beautiful Krishna, who happens to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom loves all the residents of Vrindavan and all the residents of Vrindavan love, he begins to speak. "Maya tekari magavan makabango anugranata maranu smritaye nityam matasyendra sriyabhrisham maya te akarim megavan." Megavan is Lord Indra. "This has been done by me unto you." Maka bango. Maka means the banga, the stopping of the sacrifice. Anugranati. Anugrahaya. Anugranati means to show you mercy, because it has made the disease of your pride come to the surface, and then we could deal with it. Mad anusmitaye nityam. "For the sake of remembrance, constant remembrance of me, Matsyendra Sriya Brisham." Because you are intoxicated by the falsity of thinking yourself so powerful, Indra, therefore I have done this out of my mercy to you, to remove that intoxication, to remove that false sense of self, to remove that pride. I have done this to you because I want you to always remember me, because you're acting, you're my servant, you're Indra, the heavenly king who is my servant. And intoxicated by pride, you forgot that. And forgot, you remembered you're Indra, but you forgot that you're my servant. And therefore, this is this is very dangerous. So this is what he said: "I've done this to you. Why? Out of my mercy, to give you constant remembrance of me and to remove the intoxication of your pride." That's the first verse. Very simple, straightforward. We'll read some of the purport here. According to Sridhar Swami, Indra and Krishna here exchanged a heart-to-heart talk. Indra revealed his mind to the Lord, and now Lord Krishna similarly reveals his own intention. This is what Krishna was trying to do. In text 11 of this chapter, Indra emphatically declared that Lord Krishna is in fact everything, and thus according to Indra's own criteria, forgetting Lord Krishna is clearly a state of insanity. So therefore what Krishna was trying to do, because when we're proud, all we think of is ourselves. And this is unnatural, and it is the cause of misery. So Krishna was trying to remove the insanity of Indra, to get Indra to regain his natural position of always thinking of him. The next verse. "A man blinded by intoxication, mam aishwarya srimandandho, mada, anda." Anda means blind. Griham anda kupam. Mada anda, rendered blind by the intoxication, aishwarya and sri, power and opulence. Dandapanim napashyati, with the rod of punishment in my hand, one does not see me. A man blinded, this is the verse translation, a man blinded by intoxication with his power and opulence cannot see me nearby with the rod of punishment in my hand. If I desire his real welfare, I drag him down from the materially from his materially fortunate position. And after telling Indra this, explaining what he has done, why he has done it, and then giving a general principle in this verse, I drag him down. When I want to show him favor, I drag him down from his materially fortunate position. I punish him. He cannot see me. He's blinded by his pride. And I punish him and drag him down. But that punishment is actually my favor. And then in the final verse he says, Indra, you may now go. Execute my order and remain in your appointed position as King of Heaven. But be sober without false pride. Lesson's been learned. No further punishment for Indra's rectification is required. Now you can go. Be King of Heaven, but don't become falsely proud. Do your service, but do it as service. We'll go back to the 16th verse and we'll read the comment here, the purport here. I'll read the verse again. A man blinded by intoxication with his power and opulence cannot see me nearby with the rod of punishment in my hand. If I desire his real welfare, I drag him down from his materially fortunate position. Purport. One may argue, God should desire everyone's real welfare. Therefore, why should Lord Krishna state in this verse that he removes the intoxicating opulence of one who is about to receive his mercy, rather than simply stating that he will remove everyone's opulence and bless everyone? So does that mean that Krishna is partial to some souls and impartial? Because we expect that the Father, Krishna, Aham Bijapada Pita, he wishes welfare for everyone. So why is Krishna saying, I only punish those who I want to show my mercy to? Doesn't Krishna want to show his mercy to everyone? Everyone belongs to him. On the other hand, we may point out that irrevocable death occurs for everyone. And thus Lord Krishna does take away everyone's opulence and everyone's false pride. However, if we apply the Lord's statement to events within one's immediate life before death, we may refer to Krishna's statement in Bhagavad Gita 4.11, Yeya tamam prapadyante tamsta taivabhasamyam. As people surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. Lord Krishna desires everyone's welfare, but when he says here, yasya chami anugraham, for one whose welfare I desire, it is understood that the Lord refers to those who by their own activities and thoughts have manifested a desire to achieve spiritual benefit. Lord Krishna wants everyone to be happy in Krishna consciousness, but when he sees that a specific person also desires spiritual happiness, the Lord especially desires it, the spiritual advancement, for that person. This is a natural act of reciprocation consistent with the Lord's statement, Samaham Savabhuteshu, I'm equal in my attitude to all living beings. So very interesting point, how Krishna, he does desire special mercy for specific souls, the ones who ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya mayatateshu chapyaham. Otherwise, samoham savabhuteshu. Otherwise, Krishna is equal to everyone. But for those who worship him with devotion, he is especially dear to them. He especially lives in them, and they especially live in him. Mayatateshu chapyaham. Because those souls who wish to love Krishna, they live in Krishna's mercy. And in that way, they are living in Krishna. They see Krishna's mercy in everything. And Krishna is in them, living especially in them. How does Krishna, Ishvara Savabhutanam, Vidushaya Arjuna Tishati, he's in everyone's heart. So how is he especially? If he's in everyone's heart, how can we say he's especially in the heart of a devotee? Krishna says that. And the answer is, he's active there. He gives advice, he advises. He prompts from within as the Chaitya Guru, as the Lord in the heart. So he is within and without for the devotee whose desire is to advance spiritually. And otherwise, samaham savabhuteshu, he's equal to everyone, like the judge. He allows everyone to reap the fruits of their work. So that's the comment, the purport over there. So Krishna's finished talking. He said, now you can go. You've learned your lesson. No further dealings are required on this point. Now go, but don't make the same mistake again. Now in text 18, beginning in 18, it's the introduction, the 19:20:21, Sarabi in three verses, the cow is going to offer her prayers to Krishna. And here's the introductory verse. Mother Sarabi, along with her progeny, the cows, then offered her obeisances to Lord Krishna. Krishna had just finished with Indra. Now Sarabi steps forward. Respectfully requesting his attention, the gentle lady addressed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was present before her as a cowherd boy. Purport. The statement here that the heavenly cow Sarabi approached Lord Krishna along with her progeny, Svasantanai, is a reference to the transcendental cows who played with Lord Krishna in Vrindavan. Although Lord Krishna's cows are transcendental, the heavenly cow Sarabi affectionately saw them, as indeed Lord Krishna himself did, as related to her. Since Lord Krishna was appearing in the form of a cowherd boy, the whole situation was quite congenial, quite pleasant, because the cows were there and Sarabi was there. And Sarabi, just like Krishna, doesn't appear in the moon dynasty, really, because he's the eternal Supreme Personality of Godhead. But yet, he's known in that way, and the moon sees him as his own descendant, and has special affection for him in that mood. So similarly, Sarabi, although the cows that are with Krishna are especially they're fully transcendental, they're not actually the progeny of Sarabi, with affection, because they are related with Krishna, she sees him in that way. And therefore the whole situation, because where was Krishna? Where was this taking place? Rasa? Alpa. Where was this taking place? This conversation? Yeah, just at Govardhan. And Govardhan means Govardhan Hill also. Vadana means the nourisher, and go means the cows. Paniya suyavasa kandara kandara mulai. The Govardhan Hill is so sweet and offering such fine grasses and water for the cows and for all the other residents of Vrindavan. And in this beautiful scene, Indra had just come and he had said his part, and Krishna has dismissed him very, very simply, by saying, just don't do this again. Okay, now you can go and be injured again. And Sarabi is there with all the Vrindavan cows. And Krishna, dressed like a coward boy with Niyoga Pasha Krita Lakshanayova Chitra, dressed very, very beautifully like Natavaro, the best of dancers, with a rope, cowherd rope around his turban, with his flute tucked in his belt, and his stick for herding the cows underneath his arm, and a bugle for calling out, and dressed in different colored cloth, and decorated with minerals, tilak all over his face, looking so beautiful. And all the cows are there. And Sarabi is going to offer her prayers now. And this is the first one. She also offers three prayers. Krishna, Krishna, Mahayogin, Vishvatma, Vishvasambhava, Bhavata Lokanatena, Sanatta Vayamachuta. Mother Sarabi said, O Krishna, Krishna, greatest of mystics, O soul and origin of the universe, you are the master of the world, and by your grace, O infallible Lord, we have you as our master. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out here that Mother Sarabi is feeling great ecstasy as she repeats the words, Krishna, Krishna. Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill by his mystic power and thus protected the cows of Vrindavan, whereas her so-called master, Indra, had tried to kill them. Thus Sarabi now clearly understands that it is not the demigods, but rather the Supreme God, Krishna himself, who is her real master forever. We'll read the comment of Srila Swami on this verse and that of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Text 19, very... So Srila Swami comments, even though we had been attacked by Indra, she's speaking on behalf of all the cows, by you, we have been supplied a master. Or in other words, we have been protected. You are our master. And this, that was Srila Sridharaswami's comment. And now the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The heavenly cow Sarabi, Mother Sarabi is feeling great ecstasy. So a lot of what the Bhaktivedanta purport says is said by is from Vishwanath, but there's a little extra. Mother Sarabi is feeling great ecstasy, so she repeats the words Krishna, Krishna. Sarabi said, you are called the greatest of yogis, Mahayogin, because you protected my offspring by lifting Govardhan Hill with your mystic powers. We accept you as our master. You are our Indra. You are our Lord and protector. Whereas our so-called master, Indra, had tried to kill the cows, had tried to kill them. But you protected them. Now you are our master. 20. Tvam na param kam daivam, tvam na indro jagatpate, bhavaya bhava go vipro devanam ye chasadava. You are our worshipable deity. She's looking and standing right before Krishna. It is you who are our worshipable deity. Therefore, O Lord of the universe, for the benefit of the cows, the Brahmins, the demigods, and all other saintly persons, please become our Indra. You become our protecting Lord. Text 20. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. Sarabi said, as you are our Indra, we will install you in the role of Indra. Excuse me, that's 21. Sarabi said, you are our worshipable Lord, Daivam, who gives supreme happiness, Paramaka. Although you have appeared in a family of coward men, you are the master of the universe, Jagatpate. You stuffed the sacrifice to Indra and easily defeated him. Therefore, you are qualified to be our Indra. And then the final verse of her prayers, which expresses her desire. As ordered by Lord Brahma, we shall perform your bathing ceremony to coronate you as Indra. O soul of the universe, you descend to this world to relieve the burden of the earth. Srila Sridhar Swami comments on text 20, and then we'll read the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And before that, Jiva Goswami. But Krishna might object, you already have an Indra. To which they reply in anticipation with the verse beginning with Indram. We have had enough with the Indrahood of this Purandara, of this Indra. But Krishna may reply, because he tried to kill us all. What kind of master is that? But Krishna may reply, the chief demigod is Indra, so how can I be Indra? And they answer with the words beginning with Avatirno Si, saying that you are the Supreme Lord. Yes, you are the Supreme Lord, the Avatirno Si. Jiva Goswami says, we are simply going to initiate you, who are already our Indra, in the topmost Goloka. We will initiate you for the sake of making this fact known today in human society. Initiate you in the sense we'll install you as our Indra with this Abhishek. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments here on 21. He comments, Sarabhi said, as you are our Indra, we will install you in the role of Indra with an Abhishek. Krishna said, by whose order do you want to do this? Is this some independent desire? Sarabhi said, it has been ordered by Brahma. When Indra was afflicted with fear, he went to Brahma to explain everything about your Govardhan Leela. Brahma felt somewhat fearful upon remembering his previous offense to you. So he gave me this order. O Sarabhi, you are very dear to the Lord, the protector of your relatives. Therefore you should go to Krishna, the ocean of mercy, and get Indra forgiven for all his offense. Perform an Abhishek and install Krishna as the king, the Indra of the cows. You may ask, what is the benefit of an Abhishek to you, whose rarely attained lotus feet are served by Brahma and Shiva, and who is the Indra king of billions of universes? We want to do this for our own purification. Although you are the invisible soul of the universe, you appear to relieve the burden of the earth. If you did not appear, how would we ever become fortunate? If Krishna did not appear, how would we ever become fortunate? If Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu hadn't appeared, how would we become fortunate? And if Srila Prabhupada hadn't appeared and then carried that mercy to the West, how would we have become fortunate and where would we be now? You would be engineer, IT man, somewhere. You'd be the king of Malaysia by now. Where would we be? So this is those are Sarabhi's words and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment on it. How would we ever become fortunate? So Janmashtami is coming up, so we should think about this. Right? How Krishna's appearance makes the whole earth fortunate. The earth itself is fortunate because it's being marked by the lotus feet of Krishna. And all the inhabitants of the earth, even 5,000 years later, are fortunate because He's come and displayed his pastimes, and we can hear about them, and they are full of sweetness. Then 22 and 23. Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus appealed to Lord Krishna, Mother Sarabhi performed his bathing ceremony with her own milk. And Indra, ordered by Aditi and other mothers of the demigods, anointed the Lord with heavenly Ganga water from the trunk of Indra's elephant carrier, Aravat. Thus, in the company of the demigods and great sages, Indra coronated Lord Krishna, the descendant of Dasara, and gave him the name Govinda. And this was took place where? Govinda Kund. Raise your hand if you've been to Govinda Kund. Chaitanya, you've never been to Govinda Kund?
No.
Why?
Gone yet.
Why?
I'm waiting.
Why, don't wait. Why don't you just go?
Is it Vrindavan?
Yeah. Around Govardhan Hill. You've been there? Did you go walk around Govardhan Hill?
I haven't been to Vrindavan.
When will you go?
Also, must get must leave us. No, must be yet. I haven't done it not yet.
All you need is someone to get in a taxi and say, take me to Vrindavan. Good fare. Purport. According to the Acharyas, because Indra was embarrassed by his blunder of attacking Vrindavan, he was reluctant to worship the Lord. Therefore, the heavenly mothers, such as Aditi, encouraged him to go ahead and do so. Feeling authorized by the encouragement of demigods less offensive than he, Indra then bathed the Lord. Indra discovered that the beautiful cowherd boy named Krishna is indeed the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's comment. After praying to Krishna to accept the post of Indra, Sarabhi bathed the Lord with her milk. Because Indra was embarrassed by his blunder of attacking Vrindavan, he was reluctant to worship Krishna. However, after receiving encouragement from Aditi and the other heavenly mothers, Indra felt authorized and then bathed Sri Krishna. Although Krishna had appeared in the Dasara dynasty because he had a greater desire to be a cowherd, they named him Govinda. Go means cows and Vinda means to protect. Go can also mean swaga, heaven. Therefore, Govinda can mean one who enjoys the position of Indra. Ga also means the senses. Because ga and means the senses, and ga also means the cows. And what is the similarity between the senses and the cows? And cows, if you don't control them, they'll wander everywhere. Govinda. If go means the senses, Govinda means one who protects or nourishes the devotees. How? By attracting their senses with his great beauty and wonderful pastimes. 24. Timburu, Narada, and other Gandharvas, along with the Vidyadharas, Siddhas, and Charanas, came there to sing the glories of Lord Hari, which purify the entire world. And the wives of the demigods, filled with joy, danced together in the Lord's honor. The most eminent demigods chanted the praises of the Lord and scattered wonderful showers of flowers all around him. All the three worlds felt supreme satisfaction, and the cows drenched the surface of the earth with their milk. Rivers flowed with various kinds of tasty liquids. Trees exuded honey. Edible plants came to maturity without cultivation, and hills gave forth jewels formerly hidden in their interiors. Oh, King Pariket, beloved of the Kuru dynasty, upon the ceremonial bathing of Lord Krishna, all the living creatures, even those cruel by nature, became entirely free of enmity. Short comment by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. After Krishna's abhishek, ceremony, all living entities gave up their natural animosity, their anger towards each other and enmity towards each other, and they all became friends. And the final verse in this chapter, after he had ceremonially bathed Lord Govinda, who was the master of the cows and the cowherd community, King Indra took the Lord's permission, and surrounded by the demigods and other higher beings, he returned to the heavenly abode. So that's the end of the 27th chapter, Indra and Sarabi offer prayers. Let's begin the 28th chapter, which is entitled Krishna Rescues Nanda Maharaj from the Abode of Varuna. Sri Badarayani said, having worshipped Lord Janardhan and fasted on the Ekadasi day, Nanda Maharaj entered the water of the Kalindi, the Yamuna, on the Dwadasi to take his bath. So there's a comment by Srila Jiva Goswami Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, because we know that Nanda Maharaj is going to be kidnapped or taken away by one of the order carriers or messengers of Varunadev. And what was his fault? Jiva Goswami explains. It's a little, there was a technical fault on his part, because on the Ekadasi, it was an unusually short Ekadasi, because there's a system of the different tithis, the different portions of the day. So this Ekadasi was only 6 praharas, only 18 hours. The day was considered only 18 hours on that. So the Ekadasi was complete early in the day before the sun rose. So it was his duty to bathe in the Yamuna at the end of the Ekadasi on the Mahadwadasi. But unfortunately, because the Ekadasi was short on this specific Ekadasi, then it was before the sunrise. So on one hand, it was an appropriate act for him to bathe, because he was supposed to bathe on the Dwadasi. But on the other hand, he wasn't supposed to bathe in the Yamuna before the sunrise. So this was considered an offense. So on the Dwadasi, some 2 praharas, about 6 hours of the day on which the fast had to be broken, namely the Dwadasi, had already expired during that very same day, and there was only a few moments left to break the fast. To bathe, so he had to do that. So, by the word two, it is implied subtly that no one else entered the water, which indicates how full in knowledge of the principles of devotional service Nanda Maharaj was. He was more full of the knowledge of how to, of the subtle intricacy of the time, because it was actually appropriate for him to bathe at that time. For Vaishnavas, as I think Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami will explain, or Vishwanath will explain it, that it was appropriate for him to do it, but there was a misunderstanding of the rule by the servant of Varunadev. So he was very knowledgeable, Nanda Maharaj was. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, in the 28th chapter occurs the stealing of Nanda Maharaj, the prayers offered by Varuna, and the vision by the cowherd men because of their surprise and eagerness. They had a vision of Vaikuntha. After having described the offense of Indra and how he was absolved of that, Sukadeva was so absorbed that he forgot his own self. And with the purpose of describing a further pastime, he described the story concerning Varuna to Parikshit Maharaj. He entered the water. This was even before the dawn light. There remained only a few minutes left of the Dwadasi. Doing this for the purpose of fulfilling the breaking of the Ekadasi fast, and acting on the strength of the injunction of the Shastra, and then Vishwanath gives a Shastric injunction, if one sees that a Dwadasi only has less than a minute remaining at some time later than midnight, one should at that time execute all the duties prescribed for up to the noon of the Dwadasi in accordance with the order of Lord Shambhu of Shiva. So Nanda Maharaj was actually correct in his calculation that he had to break the fast and bathe in the moon at this exact time. But yet he was taken away. Text 2. Because Nanda Maharaj entered the water on the dock, in the dark of night, disregarding that the time was inauspicious, a demoniac servant of Varuna seized him and brought him to his master. Purport. Nanda Maharaj was intent on breaking his fast during the Dwadasi day, of which there remained only a few minutes. Thus he entered the water to bathe at an inauspicious time before the first dawn light. The servant of Varuna who arrested Nanda Maharaj is stated here to be an asura, or a demon, for obvious reasons. First, the servant was foolishly ignorant of Nanda Maharaj's position as the pastime father of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Also, Nanda Maharaj's intention was to carry out the injunctions of scripture. Therefore, Varuna's servant should not have arrested Nanda on the technical ground that he bathed in the Yamuna at an inauspicious time. Later in this chapter, Varuna himself will say, Ajanata mamakena mudena. This was done by my ignorant servant, who was a fool. This foolish servant did not understand the position of Krishna or Nanda Maharaj, or devotional service to the Lord. In conclusion, it is clear that Lord Krishna wanted to give his personal audience to Varuna, and simultaneously accomplish other didactic or teaching purposes. Thus this wonderful pastime will now unfold. So in the last sequence of chapters, Indra, the demigod Indra, was the one who Krishna gave his mercy to, and now he's going to give his mercy to another demigod, the demigod Varuna. Text 3. O king, not seeing Nanda Maharaj, because the cowherd men were on the shore, the cowherd men loudly cried out, O Krishna, O Rama. Any time there was any distress, any misfortune, any difficult, this was the particular characteristic of the residents of Vrindavan. They knew no other shelter other than Krishna. So they would always and simply call out to Krishna, Krishna and Balaram. Lord Krishna heard their cries, and he understood that his father had been captured by Varuna. Therefore the Almighty Lord, who makes his devotees fearless, went to the court of Varunadev. Purport. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that when Nanda Maharaj went to bathe in the river, he was accompanied by several cowherd men. When Nanda did not come out of the water, they began to cry out. And what did they begin to cry out? Krishna! Oh, Krishna! Completely, not holding back, with no shyness, not inhibited, they weren't wondering or worrying what others would think. Krishna was their only shelter. And they were calling out full-heartedly, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Understanding the situation, Krishna immediately entered the water and went to the court of the demigod Varuna, determined to free his father and the other cowherd men from fear of a mere demigod. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on text 3. Several cowherd men accompanied Nanda Maharaj as guards when he went to take his bath at night. When Nanda did not come out of the water, they began to cry out. Though Krishna was far away, sleeping on his bed of flowers, he heard the cowherd men shouting, Krishna, Rama. So there is a point for us sadhakas here, our practitioners. The siddha or perfected residents of Vrindavan, they called out to Krishna, and Krishna immediately came. So that which we perform as sadhana is the same in Krishna consciousness as what we do if we become a siddha. But the difference is when one is a siddha, or a perfected soul, he does this activity fully, completely, and naturally. Well, we, as sadhakas, practitioners, have to practice doing it. So what is the lesson that the siddhas are teaching? That there is some difficulty. Krishna may seem very far away, but nevertheless, our practice, not yet perfected perhaps, but our practice should be to call out to Krishna. And even though Krishna may be far away, as he was at this time, what was he doing? He was sleeping on his bed of flowers, his very, very soft bed of flowers. How wonderful. But immediately, he heard the cowherd men shouting Krishna and Rama. The word upasruta indicates that Krishna heard from close by, because Krishna is all-pervading. He is always very near to everyone. Even though he was far away, he was very near. Understanding the situation, Krishna rushed there, jumped into the water, and went to the court of Varuna. Krishna was determined to free his father and the other cowherd men from the fear of a mere demigod. Krishna is called Swanam Abhaya Da, relieving the fear of his associates, because by freeing Nanda from Varuna's clutches, Krishna relieved the fear of his relatives. So very important point, where to turn when we're fearful in this fear-giving material world. We have to practice this art, as we are hearing, as perfected by the residents of Vrindavan and the other cowherd men. They're always calling out to Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. 4. Seeing that the Lord Rishikesh had arrived, the demigod Varuna worshipped him with elaborate offerings. Varuna was in a state of great jubilation upon seeing the Lord, and he spoke as follows. And now 5, 6, 7, and 8. There will be 4 prayers. Indra offered, Krishna offered 3, Indra offered 10, Sarabhi 3, Varuna 4. Sri Varuna said, "Now my body has fulfilled its function. Indeed, now the goal of my life is achieved." What was that goal? Krishna was standing before him, effulgent, beautiful Krishna, even though he was underwater. O Lord, those who accept your lotus feet, O personality of Godhead, can transcend the path of material existence. Transcend material existence means fear. So those who accept your lotus feet, and the prime methodology in Kali Yuga of accepting the lotus feet of Krishna is chanting his name, Kalo Nasteva 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 Gatyaniyata. So such persons who take shelter of Krishna's feet, samasvitam ye padapalava plavam mahatpadam punyaya shomarari bhavam buddhir vachapadam parampadam padam padam yadvipadam natesham. That ocean, those who take shelter of Krishna, that ocean of the material existence, the fearful ocean, shrinks to the size of vatsapadam, the water that fills a calf's hoof print. So Varuna says this: if we take shelter of your lotus feet, one can transcend the path of material existence. Here's the purport, and then we'll read the comment of Vishwanath. Varuna ecstatically exclaims here that since he has now seen the infinitely gorgeous body of Krishna, of Lord Krishna, the trouble of assuming a material body has now been supremely justified. Very interesting way of looking at it. It's worth it if somehow or another we advance to the point in our Krishna consciousness where we see Krishna, it's worth it to have a material body. Otherwise, it's not worth it, because ultimately it simply means trouble and suffering. We try and try and try to enjoy, but it means suffering having a material body. The material body is composed of different senses and internal organs, and it means suffering despite our plans, grandiose plans to enjoy. It means suffering. But yet, tarappadruvamartadam, yet it's worth it if through this material body we can somehow advance the Krishna consciousness and actually see Krishna. Indeed, the comment continues, the artha, the goal or real value of Varuna's life has now been achieved. Because Lord Krishna's form is transcendental, those who accept his lotus feet go beyond the boundaries of material existence, and thus only the spiritually unaware would presume that the Lord's lotus feet are material. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, all the thousands of bodies which I have received till now have been useless, because in all those lives I did not see you. Today, my body has become successful. And remember that Krishna is unlimitedly beautiful. So therefore, Varuna says, today, this body, my having a body, has become successful, because now I'm seeing you. That is the indication of the word nibrita, which comes from ni, from nitaram, completely successful, and britta, accepting a body. Varuna said, today I have understood what is most valuable. What, if you think about it, what do we consider valuable? I guess every 10 years or so, our whole consciousness shifts. And what we thought was valuable at 9 years old doesn't seem at all valuable when you're 19 years old, and what you think is important and valuable at 19 doesn't seem important and valuable when you're 29, and what you think is important at 29 isn't valuable at 39, and then 49, and when you're 59 or 69, everything shifts. But this, he's saying, today I have understood actually what is most valuable. Though I possess all varieties of jewels, until now I have not attained such a jewel as you. What kind of a jewel is Krishna compared to? I don't know the Sanskrit word, but it's a sapphire. Yes? Huh?
Neelam.
Neelam blue. The blue. Blue sapphire, because Krishna is effulgent and blue. Bluish color. So he is the real jewel. Those who worship your lotus feet can cross the ocean of material existence. How fortunate I am to attain your darshan without any effort. Everyone is struggling to see Krishna. And Krishna went to see Varuna. All he had to do was kidnap his father. It was very simple in that sense. Text 6. My obeisance is unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Soul, within whom there is no trace of the illusory energy which orchestrates the creation of this world. Same point again. Indra said the same thing. Because we need to hear this, because especially now, because this is the 28th chapter, and the 29th chapter, Krishna is going to start to dance with the gopis of Vrindavan in the middle of the night. So we need to be reminded again and again and again that what Krishna is doing is completely transcendental. He possesses not a thread or a trace of a material body, and therefore what's motivating him to dance with the gopis, to do anything that he does, is completely different than that which would motivate someone with a material body controlled by the mode of passion to dance with ladies in the middle of the night, young beautiful girls. One is lust, one is love. One is transcendental, one is mundane. One is within the modes of material nature and one is completely beyond the modes of material nature. So we need to hear this again and again and again. So it's perfectly clear to us that what's going on is an exchange of transcendental rasa, transcendental tastes, a completely different flavor than anything within the material realm. This is completely beyond the material realm. So therefore Indra said it, your body is transcendental. You are not influenced by pride, by anger, by greed. Indra said, I thought you had stopped my sacrifice out of your greed and pride, but this has nothing to do with you. You are transcendental. And now Varuna is saying the same thing. There's no trace of the illusory energy. The mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, caused pride and greed and lust and anger. None of this exists within you, O Lord. Even though the material energy is orchestrating, controlling the creation of everything that goes on in this world, it has nothing to do with you. You are beyond it. Tribir gunamaya bhavera ibisavamidam dagat. You are beyond this material energy. Purport. The word Shruyate is significant here. Shruti, or Vedic literature, consists of authorized statements made by the Lord Himself or His enlightened representative. Thus neither the Lord nor recognized spiritual authorities would ever say that within the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, there is the fault of illusion. Srila Sridhar Swami points out that the word Brahmane here indicates that the Lord is full in Himself. The word Paramatmane indicates that He's the controller of all living entities. So He has no needs on the material level. He is not lacking anything on any level. So therefore everything that He does, because when we act in this world, it comes from a lack. We need something. We're missing something. But when Krishna is the absolute truth, what motivates Him to act? So this is the mystery of Krishna's Leela in Vrindavan. He's motivated by His bhaktivatsalya, madhurya mood of sweetness, of wanting to increase the ecstasy of His devotees. Because He's the controller of all living entities. What does He need? He's full in Himself. What does He need? His creations are full. What to speak of Him? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments here. Varuna says, you are approached by the three paths of bhakti, jnana, and yoga. I pay my respects to you as Bhagawan, Brahman, and Paramatma. Those who claim that these realizations are tinged with Maya are wrong. These realizations are not touched by Maya, which makes the various things of this world. And there are two more prayers. I'll just complete those. Your father, who is sitting here, was brought to me by a foolish, ignorant servant of mine who did not understand his proper duty. Therefore, please forgive us. Purport. The word I am, this one here, clearly indicates that Krishna's father, your father who is sitting here, was brought to me by a foolish, ignorant servant of mine. It indicates that Krishna's father, Nandamaraj, was present as Varuna was speaking. In fact, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states that Varuna had seated Sri Nanda on a jeweled throne and had personally worshipped him out of respect. technically Narada Muni was correct in entering, Nanda Maharaj was correct in entering the water just before sunrise. The following explanation is given by Srila Jiva Goswami in his commentary on the first verse of this chapter. After an especially short ekadasi, measuring only 18 hours, about 6 hours of the lunar day in which the fast had to be broken, namely the dwadasi, had already expired before the dawn. Since at sunrise the proper time for breaking the fast would have passed, Nanda Maharaj decided to enter the water at an otherwise inauspicious time. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. Krishna said, "Why are you embarrassing me by praising me like this?" In answer, Varuna says, I have really offended you." And with this mood, he speaks this verse. Varuna continued, "According to the Bhakti Shastra, one can enter the water before sunrise after an especially short ekadasi. Not knowing this, one of my foolish servants committed a great offense by bringing your father here. The offense of my servant is also my offense." Pointing with his hand, Varuna showed Nanda seated on a jeweled throne, which Varuna himself had offered in order to worship Nanda Maharaj, who was internally engaged in remembering Krishna, his own worshipable deity. Varuna continued, "O Krishna, you are the ocean of forgiveness, but because I am the ocean of offense, you can punish me suitably if you wish." And then the eighth final prayer here. "O Krishna, O seer of everything, please give your mercy even to me." What nice prayers. What the demigods, both Indra and Varuna, they're speaking so humbly. What was Varuna's fault? It wasn't even direct. It was that his servant did something. And he's begging Krishna, "Please give your mercy even to me." And this is a demigod, such a powerful individual. And then to see my consciousness, such pride is there. "I won't speak like that. Please give your mercy even to me. I deserve your mercy. I'm such a wonderful person." "Oh Govinda, you are most affectionate to your father. Please take him home." So I'll end here. Then this pastime continues in a different way. And it continues because, based on the fact that now Nanda Maharaj has actually seen all the opulences of Varuna. And he's seen that this powerful demigod has worshipped Krishna. He didn't see Indra's worshipping and praying to Krishna because it was done in a secluded place. But now he's seen the demigods are even worshipping Krishna. And he's going to tell all the coward men this. "You know what I just saw? I just saw Varuna, the demigod in charge of the vast oceans who's unlimitedly wealthy. He was praising and worshipping our Krishna." And then they're going to say, "You know, who is Krishna? You know what?" Anyway, we'll find out what they're going to say, Krishna willing, in the next class. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Krishna Vrindavan Leela ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Thank you.